Welcome to the Rum and Apple Show. What is today? Oh, God. It is the 4th of July. It is the 4th of July. 4th of July. 4th of July. America's independence. Ooh, yeah. Independence 4. Will Smith. Jeff Goldblum. Fighting aliens because cigars. Wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. What? Makes no fucking sense. I don't give a shit. 4th of July, baby. Have fun. A lot of people, I'm sure, are not doing podcasts today. Probably some people aren't uploading. A lot of people are probably spending time with their families and doing all that kind of stuff. And that's fantastic and nice. And if you're doing that, more fair balls to you. I love you, all right? But I got a show to do because, truthfully, holidays don't mean that I have an excuse to have a day off. That's exactly how it goes. So, we're going to cut this theme music, and then we're going to hit these goddamn gaming news topics of interest. Or disinterest, more likely.
You know what? Whatever fucking happens, just happens. I really don't care.
What does Benjamin Burnley do? Motherfucker post an image of a broken Battlefront Xbox One disc. It's like, just here you go. Want me to talk about your game? Here. Fuck you! After he made the statements of, somebody lock the basement door at mom's house and don't let her out. Anytime you're working with government folks, you gotta kind of give you the adage that if they say a week, it's a month. If they say, 3 weeks, it's 6 months. Like, you have to add on time. They call the SWAT team on this guy who's streaming RuneScape. like this multi-billion dollar company doesn't act shady as fuck on the daily, homie. PC, isometric, blah, 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 RPG, thingy-ma-bobber. You can believe it as much as you want, but take it with a grain of salt, folks. That's fucking Twitter. You can't believe everything you see on TV, and you can't believe 85% of the shit you see on Twitter. We're sorry. We're sorry. Oh, you don't like microtransactions? We're sorry. That's all I see. That's with no support. Like, no support. It's like, ah, fuck you. We're going to throw you in a prison server, but you can buy our shit. Buy our t-shirt. One of the first things we're actually going to be talking about today is Overwatch. Why? Because the competitive mode is having a few hiccups. It's fucking up slightly. And what's going on right now is the competitive play mode, originally, Blizzard said this. I think it was actually Jeff Kaplan that said this too, if I remember correctly, because this was like a couple weeks ago or whatever. Last week or something like that. I don't know. I've smoked a lot of blunt since then. I don't fucking remember. But I think Jeff Kaplan said, I think it was Kaplan. He said, the Overwatch competitive play, don't expect it to be completely finished. And that's right. It said, don't expect to be completely finished and polished when it comes out. So, Jeff Kaplan essentially, in a nutshell, said, don't expect competitive play to be finished when it comes out. So, we're seeing the results of that to a certain degree. There's a odd glitch that's happening where, here's what it is. If a player disconnects from Overwatch matches, there is a possibility that they could be put back into the game with no penalty charge if they reconnect successfully. Successfully. Why am I having so many problems talking today? I have no idea, folks, but just bear with me on that. Anyways, the odd thing is players are still getting this penalty. Even this results in affecting skill ratings or even results in losses on their record, even if they actually win the match. Now, that's actually a big problem, especially for competitive play. You would think, what are the fundamental things that you want in order is your stat system, right? I would think that that is fairly important. Now, I understand gameplay mechanics, having the system function in itself is important, right? I get that, but at the same point, like, this is another incident of I look at Overwatch and I go, okay, well, this is the problem with buying a game like this. This is a problem when you get a game that when Blizzard tells you outright that they don't expect this mode to be completed when it comes out, when it re-debuts, which it has. I feel there's a large gap of placeholding that's being done with Overwatch. Now I look at it like this. I disclosed it poorly earlier. Like, I was giving a bad analysis, I guess, but like, my big thoughts on Overwatch is, and this competitive mode just in general, it's that this whole game, Overwatch in general, really feels like something that Blizzard went into half-assed. I mean, we remember the free-to-play mode that it was gonna go, and that's when I was actually interested in getting it. Because when I first heard about it, and when I first heard the rumblings of it being a free-to-play, I went, oh, okay, so essentially you're doing a Team Fortress 2 type setup but you'd be able to just, I guess, buy characters like in fucking Heroes of the Storm, one of those type deals. Like, you could unlock them through gameplay, through regular gameplay, obviously make all the characters unlockable, but if people wanted to pay, then you would have that option. Now, it's not something I even agree with. I don't think you should be able to buy characters. I think you should be able to fucking unlock them. That's the whole point of having other characters. You unlock them by completing more hours of the game or more goals within that said game. I mean, but this ain't even about that. The whole point is it's about what's going on with the Overwatch competitive mode. The fact is, the competitive mode was unfinished, right, to begin with. So now that they're re-debuting it, they're doing a bunch of placeholding shit. What I mean by that is that, yes, they've reintegrated it, but now what they're doing is they're making you guys, the ones who paid for it, be the tester, essentially, for how the server behaves or whatever configurations they need to make. And I feel that's a disservice to you, because I feel something like this should have been completed before the game came out. So you guys don't have to deal with this, and we don't have to talk about unfairly punishing players for bug fixes in the multiplayer competitive mode. That's all I'm really saying. There's nothing else outside of it. Well, I guess the only thing outside of the Overwatch problems as far as the game itself is the alarming, accurate internet porn that's being made of Tracer, which is... Ooh, you guys... just when I think the video game community can never cease to disturb me, they just go the full mile and they just don't even care. They just go from 0 to 100, they kick down the door, they blow the nitrous off, Vin Diesel gets a head rub, you know, a little rubby poke. Let's talk a little Diablo 3. No, we're not going to talk like Diablo 3, the actual game itself right now, okay? Yes, to people who have wondered about this for a long time, I talked about Diablo 3 before it came out, when it was still in production and all of these nice things, when I found all this fucking news and information about it. The point is, Diablo 3 has... The Diablo 3 director actually has left Blizzard. Now, normally this isn't much to even consider right now, because what we've been realizing is that for a long time, this always happens, it's like trading team members of a sports team, right? It's like, oh, okay, well, I want this guy, and well, if I get this guy leaves over here, we can get this guy, and it is what it is. Individuals enter into different positions and leave different positions in the gaming industry all the fucking time. Now, there's a lot to be said with the credibility of certain positions and the credibility of certain people in those positions, if that makes any sense, but this really isn't even the point. The point is, like I said earlier, that the Blizzard 3 director, Blizzard 3, oh god, no, it's the third eye of the terrifying triangle of tyrants that would be Blizzard Company 1, 2, and 3. Look, the point is, the Blizzard 3 director has left Blizzard. God, I've been fucking shit up today. And Blizzard has made a statement, right? Blizzard has said, with Diablo 3 in a good place at this point, well, yeah, that's very true. Most of the DLC has pretty much run its course, and I think right now Blizzard's main purpose is to support the game, right? And I think that's pretty much all they're doing. So they say, with Diablo 3 in a good place at this point, the current Diablo 3's current director, who has just left, is Josh Mascaria. I probably fucked that up, but he said Josh felt that it was time to pursue other opportunities with minimal impact to the team. And then they said they'll be filing a director role from within Blizzard or externally. So they're either going to outsource and hire somebody new, or they're going to put somebody in from Blizzard. And that's fine. All right, I get it. As long as you have somebody with the credibility and experience, and someone who I would say appreciates Diablo And I mean, someone who would appreciate Diablo from the sensibility of they hopefully they would like one and two, sort of, or they would know from one, two, and now three currently. I don't know. It makes me feel like, I always feel like if you're going to be involved in the gaming industry to some point, at some point in time, at any iteration, you had to have loved video games to a certain degree. If you don't, then I don't know why you're invested in the business. Now, maybe you look at it from just a business standpoint, but there has to be passion there, because we've seen how many people, there's people on movies, people on TV, people who do companies, all sorts of shit, of people who are making a business, yes, because it's for profit, but there's no passion in it outside of the for-profit attitude. We see this a lot, okay? We see this with EA. We see this with DICE in certain situations, you know? But that's developer-publisher disputes and not exactly about Diablo. But pretty much, Diablo 3 director's out and he's left Blizzard. Now, what does that mean, okay? There's probably going to be another Diablo, all right? So, I mean, because when Blizzard Entertainment says they're hiring a new game director for a Diablo project, if it was just for Diablo 3, they would specifically state, we need a new game director for Diablo 3 to blah, 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 to help maintain the team, to manage the developers, to manage the people who are, what do you call it? What I just said it a second ago, who are maintaining the game itself. So the thought of having a Diablo 4, and this is all rumor and speculation and grapevine shit, but if there was a Diablo 4, I can't be that interested right now, because Diablo 3 is the weakest link in the Diablo franchise. Diablo 1 is strong. Diablo 2 is solid. It's very solid, actually. Diablo 3, it just doesn't do it for me, man. It's not that anything's wrong with it either. That's the thing that bothers me. It's not that anything's wrong with it. There's something about it that feels off kilter that is difficult for me to identify. There's something about the personality and the identity of Diablo 3 that pushes me away from it and makes me crave for the days of Diablo 2 and Diablo 1. For me, it's like Diablo 3 is like, for example, it's a very good copy of what a Diablo game's sensibilities are, right? But it doesn't feel Diablo to me. And that sounds stupid, because we got a bunch of the old characters coming back, and there's a bunch of reinvigorated interest with the storyline and their story arcs. But fuck, man, I just can't get into it. But either or. The whole thing with Blizzard Entertainment and the Diablo 3 director leaving, honestly, I the major interest of it was Blizzard hiring a new game director for a Diablo project, and that makes me think we're going to get Diablo 4, and what a dangerous day that's going to be. Oh, man. There's been a bit of sad news, honestly, what's going on with the video game world, and I do cover these a lot, but the major reason I do cover these is because I always enjoy seeing the true humanity and the true love in a couple. In a weird way, the people are showing love and appreciation, right, and or just respects for the dead. And what happened is there was an Overwatch fan killed in an accident the day before the launch of Overwatch itself. And this has nothing to, like, let's remove all our prejudice and all our bias and all our feelings against Overwatch as a video game itself, and in the best way I can describe it, let's just kind of appreciate what Blizzard has done. Now, Blizzard's done this type of shit before. They did the same thing with Robin Williams, who passed away. But there was an Overwatch fan, Wu Hongyu, who passed away on the 23rd of May, and this was the day before the game's launch. Now, the control center map of the Lijiang Tower now is the name Hongyu beside an astronaut suit with the phrase that translates to "Heroes never die." Now, there was a picture on Reddit of a chat log that Hongyu had been in that day he passed away, and it translated to, "Hey guys, is anyone else really waiting for the launch tomorrow?" And you know what? Here, the reason I bring this up especially, and why this is especially sad, is because this guy was a kid. He was 20 years old, and the reason this dude died is because he was doing a courageous act. He was being a good person. And what was this good act of humanity he was doing? He was a 20-year-old man who died after giving chase to a thief who tried to jack his friend's motorbike. It's absolutely terrible. It is a tragedy. It really is. To me, it is, because this is a person who I'm fairly sure was a decent human being, much like every single one of us. And all he was doing was being a buddy. You know what he was doing? He was being 100. He was being legit. He was being legit. He was trying to get after this motherfucker who stole his friend's shit. And, you know, he dies because of it. Because he was killed in an accident. Fucking sucks. Absolutely sucks. And especially at 20 years old. Motherfucker, I'm 30. I'm 30. So I look at this 20-year-old kid. I know people who are 20. That's too fucking young. I remember being 20. That's too fucking young, man. You haven't even discovered a quarter of your life yet. That's such a shame. It's such a shame. But I am happy to say that Blizzard has done a pretty nice thing in giving him fan service, and he will live forever. And anybody who looks at this and takes interest of this will find this guy, will find Hengyu, and read about this story. They will, because they'll go, God damn, that was a bad motherfucker. That's what I hope that's what everybody thinks about this person. They're gonna read this story, or they might catch this video and hate my ass, but then they might like the person. They'll be like, damn, that motherfucker was legit. Yo, that dude died at 20, but hey, he went out like a motherfucking badass trying to help his friends. He went out like a good person, like how many people do in this world. But I just wanted to bring it across and let people know that, you know what, that this is, this, how do you put it? This is way, it's not a bad way to go, all right? It sucks to go, it does, it absolutely does, and it's unwarranted, but, I mean, the fact that this dude was such a good person that he cared more about helping somebody than his own life, it speaks to the type of human being he was. And honestly, I think we all should be a little more like this guy. And I mean that in the sense of be a little better toward people. Because how many people are really going to chase after somebody who steals your dude's motorbike? Steal your dude's motorcycle? Not many people are going to legit chase after the motherfucker. They'll probably just call the police and talk to you. Are you okay, man? No. He decided to go the full mile and jump after this guy. Fuck it. Hero. Straight up hero. My best wishes to his family, too, because this is awful. It's time to bid farewell to PlanetSide. PlanetSide was an MMORPG. MMORPG? What the fuck is wrong with me today? PlanetSide was a MMOFPS that was going on since around 2003, and it's always been around to a certain point, and but now it's gone. And what a way to end PlanetSide by essentially having giant meteors flying from the sky while someone on a computer, obviously who runs PlanetSide, clicked the button and turned the game off forever. Now, anybody who's played PlanetSide or, you know, since the original run or post-2014, the free-to-play version, it's sad in a sense, because what, you know, I saw the farewell video, the final moments of PlanetSide and the end of the game, and it's not a farewell. It's not as if this game got cut short within its life cycle or the game had poor, like, well, it had a bit of mishandlement, but that's every game. But it's not as if that was the reason it shut down. This felt like a rare occurrence in gaming, at least one that we're privy to seeing. What I saw was PlanetSide 2 ending, right? And it wasn't that it was dead, it got killed or whatever. I mean, it was time for it to die. It was an appropriate end. And I feel that PlanetSide people who are feeling a little bit mournful, go play PlanetSide 2. Legit, go play PlanetSide 2. I mean, if I have to choose one of the MMO FPSs out there, I'm probably going to pick PlanetSide 2, because truthfully, I do enjoy it. PlanetSide 2 is like Battlefield, but on a bigger scale. It's a 24-hour war zone, and it's so funny, because Cobra told me this story, and he got lost, and he was running through this forest, and he essentially got stuck in that forest. He's trying to get out, and then an enemy ran past him who was also stuck in a forest, and they ran into each other, and they stopped for a minute. They stop for a minute, and they're like, okay, we're not going to shoot each other because we're stuck at the fort. And then it's like Cobra had to take a step back because he'd been in that forest for so goddamn long trying to get out of it that when he saw that enemy, he went, oh, no, shit, I probably shouldn't shoot you right. Well, let's try to get the fuck out of there. You know what I'm saying? Let's try to get the fuck out of this forest. But no, rest in peace to the original Planet Side. You clearly gave a lot of fans a lot of fun. You guys have built memories. I'm pretty sure you got the Planet Side in its life cycle. It produced clans. It produced friends. It produced good teammates, good enemies, you know, and I really believe that sort of community will carry over to Planet Side 2 if it hasn't already, right? I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about it. Now, my biggest thing with Planet Side is that Daybreak is a horrible company, okay? Let's not be surprised here. Daybreak Games is not really a good company, okay? They're actually owned by Columbia Capital Management. And essentially what they do, they are an asset stripping company. That is a fucking travesty. And that explains a lot if you think about it and you kind of follow the money and you kind of look into where a lot of the Daybreak decisions are made. I really think it comes from the company above them. But that's another topic for another day. Planet Side being dead is sad, but it does live on. Planet Side 2 continues, and I honestly believe that what people got from Planet Side in its original run will never die. That's the one thing. I think Planet Side did the most important job of any video game. It was to provide fun, and it was to provide memories. State of Decay. Now, this is a game I remember playing a while ago. I think I was playing it on the Xbox 360 when I first fucked around with it. I think my brother was still living with me at the time, I believe. I don't know enough about my own personal history behind it, but I like State of Decay. I think we'll just get that one right out the gate. Ooh, Rum and Apples likes a game. Yes. Ooh. Woo. I do like games, you fucks, okay? I like a lot of games. It's just unfortunate that a lot of games are terrible. State of Decay, however, is not terrible. It's merely half terrible. Seriously now. State of Decay is getting a PC release. Well, retail PC release. So pretty much you'll be able to get a boxed version of it, and now that's always nice, I suppose, you know what I'm saying? You know me, and being the enthusiast of fucking physical disc copies, as I am, everybody knows, not everybody knows, I think barely anybody knows that State of Decay 2's coming out that I'm hyped about. Maybe I'm probably the only one, but that's okay. Nordic Games had recently announced that, boxed version of State of Decay is gonna happen on PC. Now, in this press release from Nordic, they announced the State of Decay Survival Edition includes two expansion packs of the game, is coming to the retail section of your store, of your Mega Mart, of your Wally Mart, of your Target, of your K Mart. Did I say it? Yeah, I said that right. I'm sorry. There's no funny way to say K Mart or K Moore. Yeah, I'll say it like a French guy. K Moore. Your Wally Mart, your Target, and your K-Moore. Fuck. Anyways, coming to retail on August 9th. $20, right? Includes a clamshell case, the game on DVD, which requires redemption of a Steam code, which bothers me very much, a poster, and the game's soundtrack on CD. There are pictures all over about it and shit, and it looks nice or whatever, but that's the one thing. So, here's the biggest problem that I find with this. Even if you buy the boxed retail version of State of Decay on PC, I still have to redeem a Steam code. Okay, maybe I'm confusing the whole point of a physical copy, but to me, I thought a physical copy was all about being able to put in the disc into your ROM drive, you know, your DVD-ROM, your CD-ROM drive, and then you install the game. And then, guess what? You play it! You fucking play it! I understand you want to combat piracy, Nordic. I understand every company out there wants to combat piracy, especially when they have entertainment mediums over a fucking digital cloud service, a streaming service. I understand that, right? So, And yes, fucking physical copies can get pirated. Look, no matter where you go, digital or physical copies, piracy is going to be a legitimate issue that's always going to be a constant battle. That's just how it is until we figure out, well, not we, until game developers figure out a way to eliminate piracy. But let's be realistic. It's not going to happen because those same really intelligent guys working against piracy, there are equally intelligent individuals who do pirate and who do have the understanding of these things to get these games regardless. They can crack these fucking things. It's not a problem to them. So it comes to a point of it's always going to be there as a problem to a certain degree. Okay, that argument's out in the open. So it goes back to the whole purpose of why would you release a physical copy when it's not actually a physical copy? It just doesn't make sense. Why would you give me, see, at this point, what's the difference of buying this box version where I gotta get, where you're essentially giving me a physical Steam code? That's all you're giving me. You're giving me a fucking case, you're giving me a soundtrack, and then you're, obviously two expansions, which is nice, but whatever, you should be giving those to me anyway, you fuck. It's a matter of, why do I gotta do it? Why do I gotta buy more shit just to get a Steam code? I could buy a Steam code and play the game right now for like $14, okay? Essentially, you're releasing a physical copy that does not have a physical copy. It has a disc. Is that what we're going by? As far as descriptions on physical copies, just has to include a game disc? It doesn't matter if the game is completely on it? I don't know. I call bullshit on that. I call bullshit on everything about this. And it's not just State of Decay. State of Decay is just the fucking game that so happened to give me the ammunition I needed to make this case. Because it's ridiculous. That's exactly what it is. The State of Decay boxed version is ridiculous because it's not an actual retail boxed version. Technically it is by weird revisionist descriptions, but in all actuality, it's not a physical copy. All you're getting is a fucking physical Steam code. And I can't agree with that. I cannot agree on that. If you're going to give us a legitimate physical copy, then give us a physical copy. Give us the goddamn completed game on a fucking disc. What's wrong with you? Skullgirls. We've all played Skullgirls. We've all got it at some form or another, mostly on the PlayStation Network games, free games listing of the month is how I originally came to Skullgirls in the first place. And I felt like I came really late to the party in this case. Now, I had known what Skullgirls was, I just hadn't really cared to play. I was playing other games at that time, and honestly, I've gone back, and I played Skullgirls again on the PlayStation 3, and truthfully, I don't really have much of a problem with it. It's a fun little fucking fighting game. I don't know why people missed out on it to a certain degree. Like, it really is. It's kind of fun. It's relatively campy, and there is a big anime ridiculous feel to it, but in the way it's styled and the animation sense and the, not the animation sense, but the graphical sense and how it's made and how it's, and how the character looks and how the models and the color schemes, it's very neon, very well lit, high volumes of color, a lot of nice shading, and it's just one of those, I like it. It's a fully functional fighting game. It's not that bad. And the major reason I bring this up is not to talk about why I actually liked it a lot later than I thought I would, is that Skullgirls is coming out for Android and iOS. And there's been a bit of a difference, all right? Because up until now, we've been playing Skullgirls. Well, people who have been playing them, we all played them on different forms. Of all types of platforms. Well, now the smartphone has been added to these platforms as well as Android and iOS and shit. Now, it's not going to stick to the straightforward fighting brawler game. What's happening is the hidden variable is adding a role-playing format to Skullgirls. It allows you to collect, equip, and upgrade characters as they progress through the story. And then they got something called the fight assist option, which essentially lets the characters fight. And then it says allows you to focus on bigger picture and less on moment-to-moment action, which it feels kind of foreign being in a fighting game, to be honest, because isn't the gimmick of buying the fighting game is the fighting in the fighting game? You would think that would be the key focal point, but no. In fact, the selling point of this game is the fight assist option, where you can literally watch someone fight. Okay, whatever. Whatever. Maybe it's more like a cruise control, like it has a level of automation or something. I don't know. But this is supposed to come out, Skullgirls Mobile, the mobile game is supposed to come out at the end of the year, but you can apply and get into the closed beta right now, and apparently the Skullgirls Mobile game needs a lot of, essentially you need a very high-end device to run it properly, to run it smoothly is what they say. Now, the biggest thing is, how much is it going to cost? We have no idea. Skullgirls does have a good reputation, but if you have to pay a lot of microtransactional aspects for, like, I'll put it this way. If you have to grind or have the option to pay extra money to unlock favorite characters of yours, that's going to be a big problem, all right? That's the biggest problem I run into this is the mishandling of the microtransactions and the aftermarket sales aspect. Not so much the game itself. I feel like the game is probably going to be about as standard as we can get with Skullgirls. It'll be Skullgirls on mobile, and now we just got to worry about the other monetary options that they're no doubt going to throw in there. And that's always a dangerous point when you get to a game, especially one that has a nice reputation like Skullgirls has. I don't know why I said retribution. That sounds stupid. Attack on Titan 2. Attack on Titan 2. What is wrong with me today in fucking up these titles? No, I don't want to edit that out. Dude, I don't edit shit out, honestly. Unless it's like me coughing or something like that, which I won't edit out anyway because I really don't care. And I'm not about it right now. Look, Attack on Titan Season 2. Attack on Titan Season 2. It's coming spring of 2017. The first season ended in 2013. There's been a shitload of success following it, all right? A lot of people have told me multitudes of information about Attack on Titan, everything about the Titans being genetic manipulations to all sorts of other wild, out there, bizarre, completely manic theories. But I appreciate them all, because truthfully, all it's done is make me more interested in Attack on Titan. Not to mention the Attack on Titan movie and the Attack on Titan video game that looks kind of shitty, but it might be kind of fun. I don't know. There might be a disconnect between a game looking good and a game being fun as gameplay-wise being a good game. But that's a different conversation. Attack on Titan Season 2. It is going to be interesting, all right? It was confirmed on the Japanese Twitter account for the Attack on Titan anime. They were the ones who confirmed it originally. Now, Wit Studio worked on the first season of Attack on Titan and has recently wrapped up on Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, and they are returning for a second season. Tatsuro Arakai, is now the chief director, with Masashi Koizuka moving up from episode director to overall director. So that is a good thing, considering they have people who have worked on the previous season coming back to work on the second season. That's always a good sign when you have returning cast members, because they understand the focus and they understand the direction. Now, could this be a fucking travesty? Absolutely, dude. It happens in all sorts of television, not just anime television shows. How many television shows started out great anime-wise and then ended up being shitty later? Can anybody remember Rock Lee's little spinoff series that I tried to like and I forced myself to watch just because I like Rock Lee, even though I don't like anime all that much? But either or, Attack on Titan Season 2 coming is a good thing, all right? It's definitely going to help my boy Bookshelf Gaming and his Attack on Titan podcast. If you want to go check out a good one about a fan who really does enjoy the series and has a couple really great insights and where the direction of it goes, go check out Bookshelf Gaming and his fucking Attack on Titan podcast. I think he's still doing it with my guy John Doe from the GNN podcast. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't been over there in a while. Maybe I need to go check out a few of them episodes again. I have been smoking a lot, so it's probably the right time to do it. Now, speaking strictly on Attack on Titan, there is a video game being developed by Omega Force. Now, these are the guys behind Dynasty Warriors series who are coming out with the, what do you call it? It was the next Warriors game based off the, let me hear it, Berserk anime series. Well, comic book series, but anime series, whatever. Just to know that these are the same LSD-taking psychopaths who are making the Attack on Titan game, who are also making the Berserk game, ooh, should be fun. Should be fun. Now, the Attack on Titan video game is based on the first season of the animes, and it allows the players to use those 3D, three-dimensional movement gas-powered gear. And I always found an appreciation for that in a place where technology was so limited, right? They were able to configure these odd devices to essentially transverse environment in a creative way. And I still like it. To this day, I still think it is the coolest system for transversing environment I've seen in a long time. Would it really work? I seriously doubt it. I seriously think a lot of people are going to be having Brendan Fraser levels of George of the Jungle Tarzan shit slamming in the fucking trees, baby. That's what I see happening for real. But Attack on Titan was first announced in Gamescom 2015. Supposed to be coming out in North America and Europe in August 2016, so that should be interesting. But that's the video game. Fact is, Attack on Titan Season 2 has a release date, and it's Spring 2017. I will be watching. Probably not going to review it because there are far people who are way more qualified, who actually know way more about this subject matter. I'll just let them cover it. I'll cover Red Dwarf and other shit. Nintendo's in the news again, and it's really no surprise here to what's really going on within the company. Let me ask you a question, everybody listening right now on the Roman Apple Show. Love my listeners. When was the last time you really saw any marketing towards Nintendo? At all? Like, television, internet marketing. Realistically, like, how often do we see a Call of Duty trailer? How often do we see a Battlefield trailer? How often do we see a Star Wars Battlefront trailer? Name any other company, aside from Nintendo, seems to have a better understanding of how to market their products, right? I know that this is debatable, but truthfully, I really believe this for Nintendo. The Wii U is a great case. If Nintendo had really given a shit to really market the console, aside from the reveal, right? The reveal event they did, I think a lot of people might have been a little more interested, or at the very least, they could have appealed to that 5 to 12 age group demographic that for some reason people don't believe Nintendo exists for, because it's true. That's why Nintendo stayed in business as long as they have. Look, guys, Nintendo used to run a lot of commercials, okay? Nintendo used to be, remember the original the NES system? Wonder why everybody has a NES? Because everybody heard about the fucking NES. How many people really heard about the Wii U in terms of promotion? Not that many. All that we knew was, oh, the Wii U's coming out. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that was it. Right? That's it. So, hopefully, now, now, I hope that doesn't happen for the NX. Unfortunately, I see a little bit of that attitude happening because they kind of like, what was it? What did Miyamoto say? Miyamoto said that the company wasn't talking about NX at E3 or showing it off because he was worried about copycats, right? So it's kind of like, oh, okay, look, I get it, I guess, but you can't keep thinking like that. You should reveal the system. You should reveal what people are going to get their hands on because it is different nowadays. Nowadays, marketing involves announcing that product, right? And then keeping the vested interest, like keep the eyeballs on your company before that product comes out. And that's something that Nintendo hasn't been doing very much lately. And once again, this brings us to another point of the whole conversation of a Nintendo marketing exec has essentially left, and Scott Moffitt whatever how you pronounce his name, he's leaving the company. Now, he did join originally in 2011. Now, let me ask, what has been marketed? Seriously, outside of bare minimum marketing, what has Nintendo been doing marketing? What have they marketed? Seriously. Speaking of things, just in general, I just don't get it. I don't know. I just don't know. That's really what it comes down to. I just don't know what Nintendo can do. Now, don't get me wrong. In light of this news with the Nintendo marketing exec Scott Muppet. We're calling him Scott Muppet. Anyways, with Scott Muppet leaving, Nintendo has also said that Nintendo was intending to completely destroy the executive VP of sales and marketing position and moving that to existing staff. Now, that had been reported in the past, and now it seems like that is coming to full fruition. It's really happening, and I gotta be honest, man, that is not smart to do. Unfortunately, I kind of see it as something Nintendo would have done anyways, because with them erasing this guy's position and the whole marketing aspect of Nintendo kind of going down the toilet just in general, it seems like... And then you have Nintendo's own attitude towards free promotion, like the YouTuber community, that they have a horrible relationship with. Everything I look at Nintendo right now is that, is Nintendo thinking backwards? Because that's what it really sounds like. It sounds like Nintendo eliminating their marketing department, essentially, is like Nintendo thinking backwards. It's like Nintendo's becoming a cult. They only want you to buy certain branded properties and not pay attention to anything else. It's so horrible. But honestly, all jokes aside, this is not good. Don't get me wrong. Aside from the Nintendo executive vice president of sales and marketing, since that's gone, we really have to look at the past 5 years of the terrible Nintendo marketing and watching how much worse it's going to get, which honestly, I think it's going to get worse. I really believe it's only going to get worse, man. You know, and unfortunately, until Nintendo changes its attitude with how they view the community and how they've had a terrible reaction to listening towards the Western fans. Now, they're in their own, in Japan, in their own market, they're probably good. You know what I'm saying? They're probably good. They've been fairly reliable in their own local market, but in the Western market they're not doing well, and I think it's because how they don't listen. It's not that they don't listen. I think it's that they're listening to the wrong things, or maybe they're not believing that the dedication to their fan base out here in the West would be profitable, because sometimes that's why games don't get ported over from East to West translations. That's why certain things get removed, because there is a lot of oddball thinking out here that might not be in Japan. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure. I just look at this and I go, all in all, right now, Nintendo, I just feel that they're thinking backwards. Now, as far as some closing thoughts on Scott Muppet, he is staying on through the end of July so that his position can get cannibalized internally, and then everybody can get their own set positions and move on. But all in all, bad day. Bad sign for Nintendo. So, Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse Dos. The release date has been confirmed. And, yeah, let's hope it improves upon from Dragon Ball Xenoverse failed so miserably. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about the entire fucking interface. You get put into this goddamn... It has nothing to do with the storyline. The storyline, whatever. It's fucking Dragon Ball, okay? Half of Dragon Ball doesn't make sense anyway due to mistranslation from United States, Japan, United States, and all that other shit. Look, guys, Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse, the major failing for me was that environment you were set in, where you had to run over to this one computer section to do online parallel quests, then there's another section where you had to run to do offline parallel quests, there was somebody over there, you had to go into this versus lobby, you had to walk over here to do the actual time trials. Dude, it was a convoluted mess of a way to separate your game. What the fuck? Why is it so fucking difficult to have a menu? All right, the whole environment you were placed in was a gigantic fucking menu. All right, that's exactly what it was, because you had versus match, online parallel quest, offline parallel quest. You know, fuck, you could have. All right, look, I'll take it like this. Dragon Ball Xenoverse would have been far better fucking suited if you did something like, oh, I don't know, maybe borrow from Naruto's way of having menu screens where you have like, oh, you have like the new game, then you have the versus, then you have these other modes, and it's all in a nice little list. You can just click a button up or down, and it proceeds up or down to show you the different options you can select to play the game. It doesn't push you into this ridiculous fucking, most of the time it's empty, but if you go online, you go live, you just got a bunch of other characters you could talk to and shit, and you really can't even talk to them, because the in-game chat menu is so fucking ridiculous, it shouldn't even be there. You can only say like very few catchphrases or terms like thank you or who's up for questing. You know, it doesn't really provide you actual communication. So I think it should be eliminated altogether. Look, there are a lot of things that have been assisted in Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse. I always say that because I'm conditioned to say Dragon Ball Z because I'm so used to saying it from watching the show. But Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse 2 is going to fix a couple of things. It's primarily going to fix the character customization that was lacking, some moves. I don't have the full list in front of me, but I know that there's been a lot of revamping to movements, move sets, fighting moves, all sorts of shit, all sorts of beam energy attacks, all sorts of stuff. Now, interestingly, Dragon Ball Z, I got Dragon Ball Z on the brain. Someone go find my Chi-Chi's. Okay, that was kind of silly. Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, if you saw the announcement trailer, a lot of people did, it has scenes from the series past, it has Bardock getting fucking murdered by Frieza, you got Trunks and Gohan, you got Turles versus future Gohan and some gameplay footage, and it looks like a better version of Xenoverse 2. That's what it really looks like. Now, there is a big thing about the multiplayer mode and the bigger, more expanded world that Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 is going to have. I just don't know if I can have faith in it because of how terrible the first one was. And it's not that it was terrible. It was just, sadly, the best part of the game should have been the fighting, and it wasn't. That's what bothered me about it, is that the game felt too clumsy, right? From transitioning from air combat to ground combat is very, very fledging. You know, super attacks, right? Some super attacks are like ridiculously accurate, while other attacks are just, you know what? It's as if you have a 1 in 70, every 1 out of 70 times, you might hit the thing like, that's it. 1 out of 70, 1 out of 50 maybe. And then there's other attacks that are just monsters. But honestly, I want Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 to be good. I do. I will be getting it. It's just a matter of if they can improve upon the mistakes that was made in the first game. We talked about a few of them, but there's many other ones that people will mention, I'm sure. If they can improve on the mistakes in the first one and come back with the second one, and I'll even accept their little time travel arc being reopened. Why? Because it's something that happens a lot in Dragon Ball, and it's plausible, and time, life, and death, it's not so static as people would like to believe in the Dragon Ball universe. It's not as static as we think of it as in real life. But at the very least, it's intriguing. Now, it comes out October 25th on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and it comes to PC October 28th, and you know, I want to see what they do with it. It's always interesting and kind of fun to see what they do with the Dragon Ball series. Unfortunately, GT has been terrible and always will be terrible, so we're just going to leave it at that. Little Big Planet is getting their servers shut down, and this is going to be happening mostly in Japan. Now, if you are a Little Big Planet series user, wait, hold on a second. Let me read this again. If you're a Little Big Planet series user-created levels, I'm afraid you have bad news. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so Sony Interactive Entertainment Japan Asia announced that it's shutting down its franchise online servers in Japan starting July 31st. Now, the actual list of affected games are Little Big Planet on PlayStation 3 and PSP, Little Big Planet 2 on PS3, Little Big Planet 3 on PS4 and PS3, Little Big Planet Karting on PS3, and Little Big Planet on Vita. Holy fuck, okay? I knew that Little Big Planet had a core demographic and a fan base. I'm not making fun of ages, people. I'm just talking about sales. I know they have a fan base. I did not realize that there was a Little Big Planet 3 that completely evaded my mind. Maybe I remembered, maybe I just chose to forget about it. But truthfully, it happened. Anyways, I didn't even know they made a Big Planet on Vita. I probably fucking covered it. I don't remember this shit. Little Big Planet on PSP are gonna have its services shuttered in the UK, possibly. We don't know when, but we know it's happening. Also, Little Big Planet Karting is possibly gonna have their servers shut down in North America on August 31st. Now, that was spotted by NeoGAF motherfuckers, so that's probably true, but we never know, right? So, what does this entail? with the online services being shut down, you really just can't play user created levels, uploading your own online multiplayer or any other community type function. So that's fucking gone. Now the purchase DLC is going to be available. Of course it will be. Now we're not sure if it's going to be removed from the store or not, but if the game is shutting down components, you shouldn't be selling shit to people to buy more of the game. Absolutely not. It needs to go at that point. But at the other flip side, I could see Sony completely keeping it up there because, well, if it doesn't matter if the online servers are shutting down, you can still play it in a single player, and we want our fans to have fun. Yeah, that three-letter word that nobody seems to remember anymore. That happens in video games all day. Honestly, this doesn't surprise me. Not really, not at all. Now, okay, it's happening in Japan. Now, there is a bit there's a gigantic body of water separating it for me to inherently care. Now, do people in my family play Little Big Planet? Yeah. You know, my five-year-old godson plays it a lot. He loves it. He's always telling me to play Little Big Planet with him, play Little Big Planet karting. there's actually a funny story I'll tell one day on how I had to explain to him what good people are and what bad people are using Mass Effect 3 as a template. Oh, that's a story for another day. But it's to be expected to a certain point. Little Big Planet, I don't think they're making a fourth game. I mean, I didn't even realize they made Little Big Planet 3, and we don't really hear too much about Little Big Planet other than we know that the servers are being maintained. We know that the game itself is being maintained and probably patched and updated every now and then when it needs to be. You know, I'm sure Sony was making sure that the user-generated content levels were working fine and all the assets and tools were working. You know, all that shit, I'm sure they were doing just fine, but maybe it's time that they're going to start removing a lot more things from Little Big Planet. Now, I'm sure they're going to keep this around. They're probably going to stop supporting Little Big Planet on PS3 sooner than later because that's already happening in games right now. So right now, it's more of a, well, it kind of had to happen. I mean, that's really about it. It was inevitable. So, hey, this is something we've never talked about on the Rum and Apples show before. There's a new Power Rangers movie coming out. Oh, you actually wanted me to talk about this. Right. Okay, we're going to have a little conversation, you and I, ladies and gentlemen, listeners. Admittedly, Rum and Apples is not a Power Rangers fan. I don't like them. I do not like Power Rangers. I have a serious problem with ungodly supernatural abilities being bestowed upon teenagers. Mind you, teenagers who look like they're damn near in their 30s, almost. Late 20s are supposed to be 15, 16. Fuck off. Fuck off with your terrible, terrible, terrible casting decisions as far as age. Okay? Now, after I said all that stupid shit that no gamer or no nerd wants to hear, oh, they're beloved Power Rangers. Honestly, all jokes aside, I really just don't like Power Rangers. It just never has appealed to me. I do not like that bestowing of power. You would think a being trapped between dimensions would have a better contingency plan than like, oh, let's go to Angel Grove and throw power morphers and these power coins on five unexpected fucks. You know, I mean, okay, what's the red one? He makes sense. Why? Because he's a fucking martial artist. He makes sense in this whole equation. The whole thing. Who's the other martial artist? What was him? Black Ranger. Black Ranger was a martial artist, right? What did he do? What did his ass do? I saw this episode as a kid. I thought it was racist as shit. That's right. He did his fucking martial arts styling is hip hop Kido. Who the fuck? That's bullshito, maybe. Some bullshito. Fuck out of here. Hip hop Kido. How terrible are you to your fucking actors, you dicks? That is a sigh of resignation. I'm going to stop. I'm going to talk about this Power Ranger movie. Let's start over. Everybody who listens to the full show will get this. Everybody who listens on the YouTube channel will not understand what I just went through. The new Power Ranger movie, There's been some details, okay? So what's going to happen is there's a lot of motion capture and a lot of CGI work going on. And that's pretty much what Bryan Cranston has to do to portray Zordon in the film. And that's pretty interesting considering you got Bryan Cranston, oh, Breaking Bad, Godzilla. Maybe it's one of those types of situations. You get like little intermittent clips of Bryan Cranston where he clearly was not on the stage at all. He did all of his fucking film work over a Skype call. You know, he had little 3D dots and shit. And there's someone just in his house filming his shit behind a green screen. Oh, no. The advantages of being a famous person in Hollywood, all the amenities of the little human communication you have to fucking go through. Okay. Cranston also said a couple things. He was discussing Zordon's backstory. Okay. We all know Zordon, at least from anybody who's watched the show. Zordon is essentially trapped. He's a person that is trapped between the ether world and is in the wall, so to speak, of the command center. This comes from Cranston himself, so he's saying this weird shit, not me. He still has a heart and mind, but an agenda that he's got to get these five Power Rangers to defend Earth or everyone they know will be killed. So we might get a little bit of history on Zordon and how he got stuck there, right? I mean, truth be told, I never really cared. My kind of thought was, of all the things Zordon, and then maybe it's the fact that Zordon didn't have a choice, but maybe that was the punishment. Remember that fucking robot? What's his name? Alpha, the little fucking saucer-headed robot. That guy. Maybe Alpha was Zordon's punishment, right? Maybe it's not being stuck in between dimensions and you can't move and you're stuck behind this wall with this magical see-through plexiglass that they use on Mythbusters. Oh, no! Shit! Oh, this movie, I have to watch this movie now because of all the fictional additions I've given to it that just made it so much more interesting. Get the fuck out of here. Now, legitimately, I look at a Power Rangers movie and I go, okay, it's smart to do. Why is it smart to do? Because any kid, any person who grew up in the 90s, now I was born in 85, all right? So I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and I saw Power Rangers when it came out, all right? I'm fairly confident, and I could say with 98% certainty, that I probably loved the Power Rangers as a kid, okay? But as an adult, I cannot stand it, okay? So I'll put that out right there, out the gate, all right? It's not as if I didn't know about Power Rangers. I'd never seen it. It's just, I've seen it. I saw it at the school a couple times. I just didn't really care. Or when I was younger, to a time when I couldn't, like, there are times in my life that I can't remember. I can't remember, like, when I first saw Power Rangers, and I'm pretty sure when I first saw Power Rangers as a kid, I probably liked it. But as I was older and I got into different interests, Power Rangers probably became lame as fuck to me. But the point is it smart to do Power Rangers in this day and age in 2016, even though it's probably going to come out in, actually, the Power Rangers comes out 2017, March 24th. That's a good idea to do. Why? Everybody from the 90s is going to go see this. Power Rangers is the type of movie that is guaranteed the print money. It's absolutely guaranteed the print money. More so than Warcraft. Honestly, I believe more so than Warcraft because people have had a couple different generations to grow up within Power Rangers. Power Rangers has seen so many iterations. I honestly, now I could be totally wrong on this. I haven't checked out Power Rangers in, fuck God, 10 years or so was the last time I legitimately checked up anything Power Rangers. I'm pretty sure there's a Power Rangers series, a spinoff of the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers that is probably going on to this day. If not in America, it's happening in Japan. If it's not happening in Japan, I guarantee in either country, in either side of the world, both these motherfuckers are making a shitload of money off syndication and replaying old episodes. Guarantee it. Power Rangers is a powerful fucking entity. The reason I know it's a powerful entity is because I know so many people in my everyday, ordinary life, in my work life, my everyday ordinary life, the online life that I live here with all of you guys, the people I commingle with, the people listen to my show, they all know who fucking Power Rangers is. Even if it doesn't matter if they like or dislike it, they all are aware. And this is varying age groups in my demographics. I have my demographics are anywhere between under 18, to which I don't know because it doesn't disclose it to me, to 40 to 50 year olds. It's that big of a range. It's my show hits everybody somehow. So I'm real proud of that, but all of them know Power Rangers to some certain degree, especially with the people in my age group, the late 20s, early 30s, maybe mid and late 30s remember it too. The whole point is, I think Power Rangers is a smart thing to do. What they should not do is make Power Rangers a gritty, gravelly, depressing, slow-moving, begrudging, serious, grim portrayal. Because what do we not want Power Rangers to be? We don't want Power Rangers to be a group of people you feel need Adderall or Wellbutrin or Depakote or some other type of anti-fucking depression medication. That's the last thing we want. If you go this direction, please do not fuck it off by making all these goddamn Power Rangers nitty-gritty, sad Power Rangers who have to deal. It's been 20 years and they're still doing this and they're older and wiser and more experienced and grizzled. No one wants to fucking see that. No one gives a fuck about seeing the Red Ranger broken down a little bit or the Pink Ranger not being as pink where she needs to fucking be, okay? I know that's a shitty lewd joke, but that's the point. The point is, Power Rangers, at the end of it, at the end of this discussion, Power Rangers is fun. That's what it is. It's over-the-top fun. So let's keep it there. Let's keep it at over-the-top fun and make money with this fun, family-oriented popcorn action movie you could fucking make. So there's been a lot of buzzing about a couple of YouTubers who actually have been exposed as the owners of a Counter-Strike Go gambling site that they were promoting without disclosure. Wah, 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 wah. Fuck a YouTube. Fuck you, first of all, you assholes. All right, YouTube stars are... I can't even call them that. Trevor Martin and Tom Castle. Pro Syndicate and Tamar TN. Okay, whatever. That's just their online handles. But they have essentially been in a lot of controversy and a lot of polarizing thoughts and viewpoints involving the promotion of CSGOLottery.com. Now, that is essentially a CSGO weapon gambling website, a weapon skin gambling website that apparently Martin and Castle seem to fucking own it, but we're just not going to tell anybody. Now, normally, this wouldn't be a problem because, hey, who's to say you can't start up a website and have it a weapon skin gambling website for CSGO global offensive players? Steam made it very possible for us to make actual monetary money off fucking weapon skins. So let's do it. Let's do some free marketing, right? No problem. Martin and Castle posted shitloads of videos all about it, where they were gambling weapon skins using the CSGO lotto, and they were winning a shitload of money. And how else would someone react when they won a lot of money using weapon skins that they gambled off? They were happy with surprise and elation and just happiness. They were appreciative and it was almost like it was a matter of shocking, like they didn't expect this. Well, upon investigation of the CSGO Lotto site, it was found that Martin is the director of the website and Castle is the vice president. Huh. Don't really think you could be doing that shit. Jokes aside, okay? Normally, this is never a problem. However, these guys are making gambling videos about it, and they're being very misleading, all right? It's very misleading, and that is a definite no-no, motherfucker. It's kind of like when a kid's about to grab a steak knife out the dishwasher. You just want to smack him one. Just no. Don't do that. Stop it. Stop it. You're being silly. Silly. Illy, motherfucker. Now, I don't know why I went on that tangent. Martin and Castle, they have both promoted, CSGO Lotto is promoted as a service. Yet, these guys making videos and feigning surprise and all this shit, but they've never actually disclosed and honestly stated that they are involved in this site and that they fucking own it. All right? Now, what is the CSGO Lotto? It allows players to put in weapon skins to a pot, and then they use a random number generator, and that functions to like a slot machine. And then one person is awarded all the money. Okay? That's fine. All right? Now, these skins are unlocked by playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive on Valve's digital platform. We all know this. And it's fucked up. Okay? Now, with these third-party services outside of Steam, like I said earlier, very possible for people to do this. And it has been happening. All right? Now, skin gambling isn't regulated in the same way a traditional gambling industry is. Now, we also got to realize that another factor that is very, very problematic, and it swells to the behavior of why these two dudes were doing this, Martin and Castle, all right? Realize, folks, that if you look on the age demographic, CSGO is pretty much played by younger gamers. Younger kids, man. And the market of a gambling site is, well, think about it, okay? You're trying to get their money. You're gambling, all right? If a game is primarily populated with a younger audience base, and you have a gambling site that you set up, and you're targeting underage youths to get their money, that's now you're stepping in the territories of problematics with legal, okay? Now the problem has stemmed into the legal category, all right? Now with Martin and Castle, Sassel, whatever the fuck your idiot-ass name is, fucking stupid idiot, moron idiot, okay, their failure to fully disclose their interest in the CSGO Lotto, it violates YouTube guidelines, and it also calls in a lot of authenticity questions about their own fucking videos. So now, in my inclination, since they own this site and they can influence that site any way they want, what the fuck, how the fuck am I supposed to believe that any video they've done featuring CSGO Lotto is authentic? For all we know, it's been a gigantic front this entire fucking time, and they're only doing this to fucking boost money out of motherfuckers. Now sure, I'm sure most of the skins go by all well and good, but every now and then, to boost interest, maybe it might go the other way. Maybe there's some people who they've hired under their own staff to get the best money, so the money revolves and circulates back into them by making fucking bogus trades and buys. Dude, there's a lot of conversation that can be led into something like this, all right? Now, don't get me wrong. Motherfucking Martin, he posted a video about his involvement in CSGO Lotto. Now, I'd love to tell you about that, guys, but unfortunately, it's been taken down and it's been archived, all right? Now, what Martin has said is we got a little bit of a little breakdown of what he's been saying. He said, what's breaking news now is that that myself and a few other people, including Castle, Pro Syndicate, own CSGO Lotto. This is something that has never been a secret. I don't understand why it's breaking news now. Okay, well, okay, don't know about that. It's never been under wraps. It's never been secret. We've never gone around bragging about it, saying, oh, yeah, we own the site all over social media, but it's also never been a secret. It's real. What? That doesn't make any fucking sense. So he says, what's breaking news now is that myself and a few other people, including Pro Syndicate, own CSGO Lotto. This is something that's never been a secret. So, wait a minute. If it's never been a secret and you guys do own it, there should be documented evidence of this. Documented. Fucking documented. Everything is documented in the world. All right? So, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why he's saying it's not a secret, but if this is supposedly him saving face here, he's not doing a very good job. I mean, don't get me wrong, the video that's accusing them, what is it called? The video that they made, we've not been able to find any examples, Martin or Castle disclosing their ownership of CSGO Lotto. Instead, it was the videos promoting the website as users. Yeah, that's all they've done. That's all they've done. That's fucking crazy. That's bullshit. Okay, here's the thing, folks. All right, look, Syndicate and fucking Martin, where the fuck your name is, they're saying it's not a secret. You guys should know. I don't understand that at all. I do not understand that. Syndicate went on Twitter, said, I apologize to anyone who feels misled regarding the ownership of CSGO. I'll always be more transparent from here on out. Here's the first problem. My biggest problem is When Mr. Syndicate goes, I've always disclosed that my CSGO videos were sponsored and even asked the YouTube employee if there was anything more we needed, and they said there wasn't. Well, hold on. Even in that tweet from Syndicate, that's telling me right there. That exact... Now, maybe it's the way he worded it, so maybe I'm jumping on him and I'm nitpicking. I don't give a fuck. That tells me right out the gate that if you have to ask a YouTube employee if you need to disclose anything more, right? And all you said is you're disclosing that your CSGO videos were sponsored. Okay, well, yeah, you can disclose that they're sponsored, but you're not being completely honest. See, what Syndicate's doing is a half-truth. That's a half-truth, okay? Yes, they're sponsored, but you need to elaborate. If you own the fucking site and you own the service, you need to disclose that you own the service. Okay? Yes, there is a level of transparency here, but the true-to-life cases right now with everything that I've read, and we will get more information about this, and I could totally be wrong, but right now what I see is I see a couple of guys who did a wish-washy job of transparency, finally got called out on it, and now are trying to backpedal and trying to play it down like this isn't a fucking serious travesty. This is an exact serious travesty. This is the same thing that mobile companies like Tinyco get in fucking trouble for when they have problems with their microtransactions and they're manipulating young youths to get money from their parents' credit cards. Look, guys. Make your own opinion. Right now, I don't know how to feel it myself. There's some strong evidence leading that these guys are the owners. Although, until I see it for myself in pictures and video content and all this other shit, I don't know. But right now, I see a strong case against Syndicate and fucking whatever the other fucking asshole's name is. The truth be told, honestly, this is a matter of you should know better anyway. These are largely popular YouTubers. If you have read the terms of service, okay, you know that saying the CSGO video is sponsored. But if you own the website and then you say it's been the CSGO Lotto video was sponsored, if you're not disclosing that you own this website, you are still lying to your audience. The only way to make this better is for them to openly, publicly apologize and then put it on all the rest of the videos that we own CSGO Lotto. Okay, and then people can come to their own opinion. But right now, I think people are going to look at this and go, you fucking thieves. You guys are a bunch of fucking thieves. And until this thing gets settled, that's exactly how people are going to look at them. So these YouTubers who are owners of the CSGO gambling site, CSGO Lotto, you got a long battle ahead of you. And that's the truth of the matter. Whether this is proven true or false, the damage has already been done. That's just the case. That's how it happens. These guys' reputations already fucking smashed. I don't know the guy, so I hope all goes well for him. If they have been accused and they are found guilty and they really did do this, well, fuck them. I don't fucking care. Fuck these guys. But if they're innocent, well, then I'm sorry. Damn, sucks to be you. I feel you, man. Well, look at the time, ladies and gentlemen. I look at my wrist and I see a... Well, I actually see a tattoo, but that's... I see a bird tattoo I have on my arm. But then... But it also means it is signaling we are out of time for today. That has been the Rubbin' Apple Show. Hope everybody enjoys. If you want to make a donation, help out the website, help out the YouTube channel, donate t.m.gibson@gmail.com. Go to the YouTube channel, Rubbin' Apples on YouTube and Google, Twitter at Everything Is Rum. The Twitter, slap that button. If you heard this on YouTube, subscribe, motherfucker, because Rummy loves you. If Sky does not become self-aware, I will see you next time.